one of three things. Yes, that happened to me, or more important, yes, I felt like that, or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. tonight's speaker is sort of awesome. Just a little. I met Kristen probably, I'd say maybe like a year and a half ago. And, God, we would be up at this 10 o'clock meeting at 8111, and somebody would say something funny, and I'd be like, who the hell keeps snorting? it was Kristen. And it turned into a little fun game for me, because I would count how many times she would snort in the night in one meeting. About 10 to 12 times. But no, honestly, one of the things I remember about Kristen was she cried a lot. Do you remember that?
No.
I would see Kristen crying a lot. She was miserable. Love you, but that's the truth, you know? It was very sensible. She was miserable. I can tell you today that Kristen is not miserable. She's got a smile that glows, and her presence is felt anytime she walks into a room, right? She's all about working this program. She's not all about coming to the meetings, you know? She's all about doing the damn deal, you know? And that's something I look up to, because this girl has transformed. And she knows, and I know it's not anything she did, but, you know, these 12 steps led her to something that just turned her inside out, completely unblocked her, and made her a powerhouse in this program. And it's a pretty awesome thing to see that transformation happen. I'm real excited tonight. I hope you guys enjoy it. And with that, I give you Kristen.
Hey, I'm Kristen, and I am a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Kristen.
It is super cool to be here and to see so many familiar faces and so many young people. I guess I'll start with how my day started today. You know, I had some stuff going on, and I had an inventory that I did last night, a nightly inventory, and I had emailed it to a couple people that I worked steps with. And when I woke up today, I did some prayer and some meditation, and I got a call from them and some advice and some guidance. And I ended a relationship that I was in because it was selfish. Yeah. You know, and that's, I usually don't cry this early on, you know. but you know, that's the cool stuff that happens today. And it's hard, and you know, when you're in a relationship, you go through all this like, but I really love him, and, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, when you go to God in prayer and meditation, you ask your Creator, and this book gives us one guidance when it talks about our new relationships that we have after we've created our sex ideal, and it talks about, you know, it asks us one question. It says, is it selfish? It's a powerful question. It really is, and that's how my day started, you know. And then I got up and I worked on a meditation corner that I'm making in my room. And I took a shower, I listened to some music, and I came here. And I went in the back and got comfortable and did some meditation here and talked with a couple people and got to see some people that I went to high school with and I, you know, used to get down with, and we partied together. And now three of us are in this room. And some people are recovered and some people aren't, you know. And that's something I'd like to talk about. When I first came into this program, I thought that when I picked up that white tip that I had made a decision that day. And that I had made a decision to now not drink one day at a time. And that was it. And that's how this works. And, you know, and that's... Oh, thanks. She knew it was going to happen again. so that's what I thought. And I picked up a white tip, and I had a dear friend that had brought me to the meeting. I was working, and I won't talk a lot about what it was like. But I will give you this. I'm diabetic. I was doing a lot of outside issues on top of drinking, and I was having a lot of grandma seizures. I was in and out of hospitals a lot. It got to the point where I couldn't tell if it was suicide or if I'd accidentally done it or what happened. I just always ended up in the ER. And I was working in nightclubs in downtown Atlanta 7 days a week. I had a different spot each night. And a recovered alcoholic happened to work in one of the nightclubs that I was working in. And he was calling me out for being wasted beyond belief in his nightclub. And he did it in front of a group of, like, peers and people. And when he did it, I was looking at him like, you know, you're not supposed to talk about that here. Like, we're having fun. This is, you know, business. We're just partying, you know, it's a nightclub. And I tried to change the topic, and this guy had walked up past him and said, congratulations, and, like, shook his hand and gave him a hug. And I was like, oh, what's that guy congratulating you for? I just wanted to keep off of me. I remember that. Like, change the topic, please. And Rev looked at me and he said, I have a year sober today. And I lost it. Like, in the middle of the nightclub in front of people I did not know, lost it. And I got home that night as wasted as I was, and I sent him a Facebook message, and Rez called me the next day. I sent him a Facebook message saying that I was serious, that I really did want to know, like, how he did it, and that, you know, I'd been trying to quit, and I couldn't do it, and I didn't know what to do. And so he responded, called me back, and said, meet me at the club at this time, and I'll take you to a meeting. And that's what I did. I met him up at Sutra, and we drove over to Triangle, and I picked up my first white tip. And the only person, or the only thing I remember other than Rez, was a guy named Kenny. And if you're from Atlanta, you know the heavy hitters, you know Kenny. But he saw me pick up my white tip, and the only thing he talked about in the meeting was that when he was new, he couldn't understand why people were laughing. You know, he's like, I'm sitting here, I'm miserable, I'm at the bottom of the bottom, and I haven't worked steps, and people are laughing, and, like, I don't get what's funny. And I laughed at that because I got it. And I got outside of that meeting, and I was outside talking with a couple girls, and Rez came up to me and said, you know, do you have a book? Did you buy a book yet? And he knew how much money I made, and he said, go buy one. And I was going to say, no, but I need it for whatever. Like, go buy one. And I did. I have to tell you, when I first read this book, I thought it was a little bit like Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul. It was like real, I was like, this is about as deep as a bird bath, you know? I was like, I thought, you know, this tragic alcoholic loses everything, and it's very dramatic, and then all of a sudden God enters the picture, and he is awesome, and everything's better and perfect, and yay. And it's like every story sounded like that, and I'm reading this stuff, and I just could not dive. But I read it. But I had no connection with the literature whatsoever. And I was moving out to Sacramento. I had graduated college already, and my degree was in musical theater. And I had gotten a contract before I had graduated with a theater out in Sacramento, California, for an 8-month contract working at their theater company as an acting intern. So Rez told me, did you get a sponsor yet? I'm like, no, I'm going to wait till I get out there. He's like, okay. And, you know, I'd call Rez anytime I had any one of those, like, 911 feelings. And he would just say, breathe God in, breathe you out, read the book, get a sponsor, call me if you need to. You know, like, he just keeps saying stuff like that, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, I guess I relied on him for what I knew of Alcoholics Anonymous at the time. And I will say this, I came in and it was Alcoholics Anonymous, so I didn't see any problem with the outside issues that I was on. Coming off of that stuff with marijuana. I was like, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not drinking, it's cool. And I didn't. I didn't see a problem with it, I didn't talk to people about it, and I just didn't really think it was any of their business. So there was no real sobriety at all. you know, a few people asked me how I actually stopped drinking. It was Red Bull, weed, and cigarettes. I don't know, you know, and that's the honest truth. God did not enter my life immediately, and I did not jump in and start doing step work immediately, and that was not my experience and not my story, and I suffered a lot for it. So I am 30 days sober on my flight to Sacramento, and I land there, and I am now away from anybody I've ever known, 3,000 miles away, working at a theater company. Nobody knows here that I am trying to be sober. I just know that there's a website that I can go to for AA meetings and stuff like that. I get off the plane, I go, and I do nothing but read this book. Nothing. And I still didn't like it. I'm doing nothing but reading this book and trying to figure out how to stay sober on my own until I could find a sponsor. And I would read this book in rehearsals when the lights were low and the actors were on stage, because the only lights that were on were the stage lights. So it was pretty private, and I would just be in there with it open, you know, going through. Sometimes I'd be reading personal stories. Sometimes I'd flip open to the chapters. It never dawned on me that there were steps that went in order and the book had, like, a continuity. I had no idea. So a guy comes up to me in the middle of my rehearsal, and he's another actor. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I was just reading." He's like, "What are you reading?" And I, for the life of me, could not think of anything to say. I was like, Alcoholics Anonymous? And he said, "Oh, light reading?" And I said, "No, I'm kind of in the program, I think." And he said, "Oh, really? Well, I'm not, but there are a couple people here that are." And later I come to find out that this theater company is owned by two Al-Anons and has four recovered alcoholics in the company. Go figure. God had a plan, because I got that job before I ever got sober or had any plan to do so. Anyway, so I meet one of the actors. He comes up and he gives me phone numbers, like just a list of women's names and phone numbers. And I use the list. I go and I call people, and nobody returns my phone call. And I legitimately did. I'm not one of those people that, like, threw the list in my back pocket. And no, I actually called these people, and I set up a time to go with this guy to a meeting downtown in Midtown. And at this point, I had no car. Like, I had stopped drinking, moved out to California, sold my car. I had no car, no money, because this internship paid less than $400 a month. I was on food stamps. I had nothing. Like, nothing. I was, you know, stealing money out of our little tip jar and the thing so I could buy cigarettes. It was funny. Anyways, so we make a plan to go to this meeting, and I go with this guy to this meeting at this church downtown Midtown Sacramento, and he met me at my house, and we walked there, and we got to talk a little bit. And so he kind of, you know, just started asking me some questions and asked me if I'd call those people on the list, and I told him I didn't. They hadn't answered. He said, "All right, well, I'll give you a new list after this meeting's over." I said, "Cool." We go into this meeting, and it's like six people pop total, like that's it. And I'm like, "Oh shit, like, they're gonna make me talk. This is awesome." So, and the only thing I could muster to say was that I felt like I was holding on by my fingernails and that I didn't know what I was doing. And there was another lady in there that started talking about how her higher power was her cat. And my friend turned next to me and said, "That's not AA." I said, "Thank you." I didn't know. I was like, "What is this? She's talking about building a shrine and her cat's at the temple." I lost it. I didn't know why. I was like, "This is quacky shit." You know, and he's like, "Does she just call her higher power a cat?" She's like, "That's not AA. Don't worry. It's cool." I was like, "Okay." But I got out of that, and he gave me a whole list of new numbers. And I went home and I called them, and this lady answered, and she said, "You know, if you want to meet up with me, we can do that Thanksgiving at my house. You can come here if that's okay with you. We'll get to talk a few hours before my family arrives, and see if you want to work with me." And I said, "No, you're good. You answered the phone. Like, we're straight." You know, at that point, I didn't care. I just didn't want to feel the way I felt anymore. And that's what happened. I went to her house on Thanksgiving. I met her family, and we talked a little bit. And we got down to doing some step work. And what our step work looked like is I was working over 80 hours a week at this theater. And I had to come clean with them and tell them I was all in the program and that I needed some time to go to meetings and to do some step work throughout the day and meet with my sponsor. And I had to do that because I didn't really have a choice when I was working 7 days a week. And these people needed me for scene changes. And, I mean, I was doing all sorts of stuff. I wasn't just acting. And so I had to tell them something. Otherwise, I was going to lose my mind trying to do it all in secret. And that's when I found out that they were owned by Al-Anon, and they were more than okay with it. And they said, you know, if you get any flack from any of the other interns, you just send them to me and tell them it's none of their business. So they were really cool about it. She would come to the theater sometimes, and we would, like, sit in her car, and we would start going through the 12 and 12. And we would just read it. And that's pretty much what we did. You know, she had me write out a drinking history for my step one. And, you know, I basically wrote when I started drinking and where it led to, and that was the end of it. And she asked me if I was powerless over alcohol, and I said, yeah. And we moved on. And so the what I can say is that I never had an experience with the steps. And I honestly, in my experience, believe that to be because my step one was not built on a solid foundation. I still thought that I made a decision when I picked up that white chip to not drink each day. And I can tell you from my experience today that I no more wake up a decision, I no more wake up today and decide to be heterosexual than I do decide not to drink. If I am a real alcoholic, I don't get to make that choice. And I mean that. It doesn't work like that for people like me. And we would do this. We would go and we would sit and we would read through certain parts in the book. And I was miserable. And I decided, you know, the 10 o'clock candlelight meeting with my home group in Sacramento, too. And format was a little bit different. The tip colors were a little bit different. And we would have a 15-minute smoke break in the middle of our meeting. Like somebody would come up here and DL, and we called that a chairperson, and the chairperson a secretary. It was a little different. But the person would come in, and they would stare their little bit, and then we'd have a 15-minute smoke break, and then we'd come back in, and we'd all talk. And I can tell you that there was no real recovery in those rooms, but there were some awesome people, and there were a couple people that had actually worked steps, and I do say a couple. But I found this guy in that meeting who was super sexy. I'm not kidding. This guy walked in, and he is Creole. He's, like, black but has blue eyes and is tatted up from head to toe, and he's a gangster, and I think that's hot. I mean, it's, like, my picker was just, you know, it was sexy to me. And he walked in, and I'm like, I'm going to be in a relationship with that guy. And he was already in a relationship, and I didn't care. I did not care at all, actually. And, you know, I proceeded to move forward with that, and I started to get sicker. And my codependency, and this is just my experience, it may not be yours, but my codependency is severely linked to my addiction to alcohol. And I know that for me, whenever I start to see stuff go on in my personal relationships, especially romantically, that it is a warning sign for me, and it's probably the first one that I ever get to see. So I decide to get into this relationship, and it's a disaster from the get-go. and I'm still working steps, and he's a rapper, too. So we go to his concert one night, and this is how the night looked. I'd gotten up, I'd gone to work, I'd gotten off work, ran home, talked to my sponsor, we set up a time. I was in the middle of my fourth step, and I was about to meet with her the next day to do my fifth step. And we set up a time, and the only thing I had to do was, like, write one more of my sex inventories, and I was done. I was like, I can do that when I get home from the club. We'll be cool. So I go, I go meet up with him. We go to his concert. We have a lot of fun. It's cool. It's fine. He's drinking. Whatever. That's his deal. He was in drug court and was not trying to be sober anyways. That's just, he had to go to AA meetings. You know, there's probably some of you here, too, that are just like that, and that's cool, too. You're welcome. You are. You are absolutely welcome to be here. But we, stop laughing at me! So we go to the show, we have a great time, and then we go to the studio afterwards, right? And so a bunch of people come, and he tells me, baby, I'm going to sniff tonight. And I'm like, that's cool. I said, that's you. You know, your sobriety has nothing to do with mine. Because I'd heard that, right? And it sounds good. And I'm like, yeah, there's nothing to do with it. So I can date whoever the hell I want, and it doesn't matter, right? And, yeah, that's how, oh, God. Yeah. So I say, fine, that's cool. And I'm sitting next to this guy who was just, like, shot in the mouth a couple days before. And he is literally, like, he is falling to pieces, holding his jaw together, and I'm like, I'm trying to piece together what's going on. Like, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting in this room, and I'm like, this is fun. I'm having a good time. And they've been drinking, and they've been, you know, doing what they do. And that plate passes 1, 2, 3 times. I say no. 4th time, I'm gone. And I don't know what happened. And I'm like, well, it's okay. I can still pick up my chip because I didn't drink. This is what I'm telling myself. And then the night gets a little bit later, and I drink. I go home, and it was 11 o'clock in the morning the next day. I was supposed to meet my sponsor at 11, and I called her. And I said, I can't be there. I'm sick. And I had to go to the hospital because I had severe sinus infection. And it was true, I did. It was self-imposed, but it was true nonetheless. I call her and I tell her that, and she still doesn't know at this point. She says, okay, no problem, we'll reschedule. You sound awful, you should get some rest. And I'm like, yeah, no shit. I'm thinking I haven't even been to bed yet, you know. And I call the people at the theater, and I tell them that, you know, I'm really sick, and I need to take a couple days off work, and I am the first intern in history of that theater that has ever been given 3 days off of work consecutively, and they let me know it. And the second day after that, I had called my sponsor, or I called one of my buddies, Ty. His mom and I had the same sponsor, and he would, like, drive me around to all the meetings and stuff like that because I didn't have a car. And I'd ride my bike to the ones I could get to, but if I had to take the interstate to get there, I needed a ride. I called him, and I told him what was going on, and he said, it's cool. And the only other person I knew in the program was one of my best friends, Brett, and he got, like, 5 years sober, but he was one of my best friends when I was out, and I didn't know he was sober. So it was funny when I got sober, and anyways, I called him, and he was still living here, and I told him that had happened, and he said, you know, I have enough white tips to tile your floor. It's fine. You know, you just go back. Like, whatever that means, okay? And I told my sponsor, and I told her, you know, I don't know what I did. And I said, maybe I'm not willing. And that is a funny sentence, because I was at a meeting every single day. I was doing step work. I was trying. And I was. And I could not get this. I could not drink one day at a time. I didn't know what that meant. And I thought, y'all lie. I thought you lied to me when you told me that you could do that. And I was pissed. And I thought, maybe I'm just different because these people can do it. You know, put the plug in the jug and fuck. You know, why can't I do that? You know? God. It was so painful. And, you know, and that's all I could tell her was, maybe I'm not willing. Maybe that's it. But I'll be damned if, you know, somebody who rides their bike 20 miles a day to go to meetings isn't willing, you know. So we decide. She said, you know, I don't care if you're willing or not, you know, whatever that means. She said, if you want to keep working, we'll keep working. And we did. And we didn't start back over. We didn't go to step one again. No, that was, as far as she was concerned, we had done that. So we started at my fifth step and just continued. And, you know, my contract was up and my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and I decided to move back here to be around her. And at that point, you know, I had to borrow money from friends to ship my stuff back. And God, when I got here, you can ask Nathan, I would like ask people everywhere if they could pick me up and take me to a meeting. And he thought I was trying to hit on him, and he didn't want that newcomer in his car because he thought it was weird. It's like, no, you're cool. it's funny, but it's true. You know, I would go up to the 10 o'clock meeting up here because I was comfortable at 10 o'clock meeting. And there's not always a ton of recovery there, but I was comfortable there. And I knew what that meeting was like because that's what my home group was like in Sacramento. So I would go up there, and Grace, she would keep talking to me. I introduced myself. I knew enough about the program, and I knew enough jargon that I could, like, talk my way in recovery. Like, and I started to like this book, and I could, like, quote things from it, and I knew specific page numbers and stuff. So, I mean, I could bullshit my way in a meeting pretty good where I sounded recovered, and you believe that. Anyway, so I'd be in these meetings, and I did raise my hand. I was like, I'm looking for a new sponsor. I'm new. I'm 6 months sober. It's nice to meet you. Come talk to me after. Yay. You know, and everything's cool and everything's happy. And Grace would always get me, like, after the meeting, like, right before I left, and she'd be like, hey, do you have a sponsor yet? I was like, no, I haven't found anybody yet. And, like, after, I think, like, 3 weeks of that, she was like, hey, Becca knows the book. Becca, will you be your sponsor? And, like, brings me over to her and is like, and I'm thinking, who is this little crackhead? Like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just like, what? And no, stop. What? It was a little too much. Thank you for it. And, you know, and Becca and I were great friends, and we had a lot of fun. There again, there was a lot of us kicking it and no step work. And at this point, I was suffering, and I just kind of, like, grazed the surface of that. I started to wonder why I was not having fun sober, and why do I still kind of feel like this? And Becca actually passed away a couple months ago. She had a heart infection that spread to her brain, and it swelled, and she died sober, but she died. And that was interesting, too. There's a speaker tape. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Mark Houston. I know some of you. So there's a speaker tape that he has where he talks about, you've ever been to a grave or to a burial, like an open casket. He's like, did it ever dawn on you that the person in the casket isn't there? And I heard him say that in the speaker tape, but when you experience that, like when I went to her open casket and I stood over her body and nothing. Nothing. It was wild. It was wild. But Becca was a dear, dear friend, and she was a good friend, but there was no step work. And at that point, I knew that I needed something different. And so I'd been talking to a couple people, and a bunch of us went out after the 10 o'clock meeting up to this IHOP. And Nathan was, like, asking me, so how long have you been without a sponsor? And I was like, oh, you know, like 3 days, and I'm just feeling kind of weird. And he's like, well, what's wrong with the people at this table? And I was like, well, they all have less time than me. And he goes, that doesn't matter. I'm like, well, I mean, doesn't the book say that? And he goes, no, what page? I'm like, oh, missed you. And so I'm sitting there and I take that into consideration and I get in my car and something's telling me to call this chick named Alex. And so I get in my car and I shoot her a text and I was just like, you know, your name just came to me. Would you be willing to go through this? And she was like, yeah, you know. And she was a part of a different sponsorship family at the time. And so we started immediately going through the book, and she had, like, all these requirements of crap I had to do. Like, I had to get to the meeting, like, 30 minutes early, stay 30 minutes late, had to pick up cigarette butts or do some type of, like, service work while I was there. And I had to call her every day at the same time, which I never did. it was just, like, a whole, like, laundry list of, like, good disciplines. But it has nothing to do with AA, so if that's what your sponsor's doing, I just let you know that the 12 steps are the only thing your sponsor is supposed to guide you through. And if they're not, then you should consider getting somebody different. And I don't say that to be mean or hurtful, I say that because it's the truth. So she was suffering a little bit too, so she decides, her sponsor moves to Texas, and she decides to get a new one, right? And so this guy named Scott Jackson comes into this, like, 10 o'clock meeting one night and does, like, a talk on the singleness of purpose. And there are people, like, getting up screaming, spitting, like, pissed off, like, angry in this meeting because he's talking about the singleness of purpose at a 10 o'clock candlelight meeting in AA. Oh, it's scary. Like, it was, but, you know, he said some stuff, and I talked to him afterwards. I was just like, I've never heard this stuff before. Like, who are you? Like, where do you come from, and what kind of juice are you drinking? You know? Like, and Alex comes to me, and she's like, hey, I'm going to switch sponsors. And I was like, okay, cool. And she's like, well, I mean, I'm going to tell you a couple things first, and you may want to stay with me, and you may not. I was like, oh, okay, who, what? And she's like, well, first of all, it's a guy. And I said, and I kind of, like, my ears started, I was like, who is it? She's like, it's Scott. And I was like, I'm down. Whatever, I'm down. I'm doing it. Yes. Like, okay. And one of the first times I'd ever talked to Scott, we'd all gone out, like, after a 10 o'clock to hear some band play. And he asked me if I wanted to ride with him. And I said, sure. And I get in the car, and he starts just, like, talking to me about, like, my experience, asking me some questions. And I was just, like, blown away, because at this point, I was in another relationship, and this guy was a good guy. And I was talking to him, like, you know, it's the first time I've ever been in a relationship, and this guy's great, and he's like, you really think you're capable of having a healthy relationship when you haven't done the work? And I said, well, I mean, I've been through this step before. And he's like, you haven't done the work. He's okay. Okay. And that's all he said. And I was like, oh. And you know what? Crashed and burned, that relationship did. To the ground. And it's because I hadn't, you know, I hadn't done the work at all. I didn't know what a sex inventory was. Really? Like, when people talk to about, like, a same-town sex ideal, he's like, where is that? Like, what? Like, I thought the sex inventory was just, like, where you wrote every single person that you slept with. You know? And that, like, question, like, what should you have done differently? You know, that type of stuff. Like, I didn't know that you, like, used that to, like, mold an ideal for your future. I was like, what? What is he talking? Whoa. Like, what? Anyways, but I started going through the steps with Alex, like, 2 weeks behind her. She started going through the steps with Scott, and I would go 2 weeks behind her. And when we hit the first step, it was one of the coolest experiences ever. They had me start off with the thought and the intention that maybe I didn't need God. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Maybe I can do this on my own. Sit with those considerations. And I'm like, you just want me to go out and drink or something? Like, what's wrong with you? Why would you say that to me? Like, most people in AA are like, you're an alcoholic. Come, stay. Don't leave. We'll make it if you make it. What? Like, and I'm like, like, and these people are like telling me to question that, and I didn't understand it. And you know, and they had me start working with a set aside prayer, and it was like, God, set aside everything I think I know about alcoholism, spiritual book, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, meetings, recovery. Set these things aside so I can have a new and open relationship with you. And I'm like, huh. It's okay. I do actually, you know what, those guys talking remind me of something. I owe everybody in this room an amends, because last time I was here, I had a stomach flu, and I was vomiting throughout whoever was staring up here the entire hour. Like, all you would hear was me puking. I'm sure everyone thought I was wasted. It was so funny. Amanda's in the bathroom with me, and she's like, Kristen, just pray. And I'm like, pray, I'm puking, F you. Like, and poor Doug had to drive me home, and Brooke was like, are you sure you want some soup or something? I was like, oh, sorry, guys. anyway, so now that that's over. But these people talked about the step work, like, these people talked about the step work like I'd never heard before. You know, they were talking about doing my 10th and 11th step now. They said things like, you know, your 10th step is something you do throughout the day. It's not your nightly inventory. You know, continue, watch, at once, quickly. This stuff, like, you do it now. And I didn't know what that was or anything like that. My 9th step amends, can I tell you, before I went through this work with Alex and Scott, I had made one, that was it. And I had no desire to make any more than that, and why would I? Because I didn't believe I was going to die from this, and my actions told me that. Because when I woke up in the morning, I didn't feel it necessary to hit my knees. I didn't need to do meditation. I didn't need to do those things because I did not believe I needed to do that to stay sober. My actions told me a hell of a lot more than my thought processes did, period. I didn't have to do all of this stuff because I had no connection to my first step whatsoever. I didn't believe this thing was going to kill me. Internally, I could understand it up here, but it takes a while for that stuff to travel from here to here. They started talking about this step work like stuff I'd never heard. And when I started going through with them, when they are having me turn these statements into the questions, you know, this book spends up to page 44, I believe, the first page of We Agnostics is the last page where it talks about the first step. It says, we hope we have made clear the distinction between the real alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. You know, and it continues on. That sentence is the last sentence before it starts moving to step two. They spend so much time on that. Why? Why? Because if I have no connection to my first step, it is not necessary for me to make an honest and thorough inventory, to share it with another human being. It is not necessary for me to have my defects removed. It is sure as hell not necessary for me to go out and make an amends to every single person I have ever harmed. Why would I? It doesn't make sense. If I have no connection to that first step, I don't have to do that shit, and I won't. I just won't. I start doing this work, and I got suicidal and depressed and morbidly freaked out sober. I was like a year sober when Bob was seeing me fall out in these meetings. I couldn't move. I would sit in the back in the fetal position and cry on Cal's lap because I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't breathe sober. Oh, I couldn't. I didn't understand what this was. I didn't understand how this disease could eat me alive without a drop in my system. And God, I would pull to anything. But you know, that all happened because for that relationship that I told you about with a good guy, it had crumbled. So I couldn't rely on that anymore. God removed that out of my life. I started getting connected with people that had power, who actually did step work, who were dedicated to making every single amends, who had an experience with the first step, were turning these questions into statements, like, or these statements into questions, and like having me look at my experience. They weren't just saying, "You're an alcoholic, welcome." They said, "Are you? Is that your experience? When you drink, what happens?" Wow. I mean, when that starts happening, it's powerful. It's super powerful. So I'm starting to have my real experience with the steps when I have been dry for a year. And this spiritual malady shit is not a joke. This is a three-part disease. Three. I don't know how many meetings I've been to where I hear it introduced as a two-part. It's not. It's a physical allergy. When I drink, I can't stop. I want more, right? I've got an allergic reaction, an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It only occurs in people like us. And then I've got an obsession. So if I finally, if you take all the alcohol out of my system and you can spin me dry for a couple of days, why is it that I go back to the drink? What is that? That's the obsession. That's what that is. Why do I always change my mind? I make that resolution, right? I say I'm not going to do it again. I really mean it this time, and I do. And I'm suffering, and I fucking mean it. Why do I change my mind? That's the biggest lie I think I ever told myself, is that I had a decision to make and that I changed my mind. I never did. I never did. That's what the obsession is. And then there's a spiritual malady. It's that internal suffering that we all have. You know, I haven't met an addict or an alcoholic yet that hasn't suffered some tragedy, some like internal stuff that's real deep. You know, and we get kind of like lukewarm with it in the meetings, but you know, when we sit down with our sponsors and we really start doing the work, there's some like real serious hurt there in all of us. I don't know what you've gone through. I don't know your story. You know, I only know mine, but it's that shit that continues to eat at us no matter what, and it doesn't go away. It's like a wolf, you know, it'll chase your ass down, and it can do that to you sober. And that's the wild thing, you know, that's what I didn't understand about this disease, is that I'm bone dry, I'm sober, and I'm still suffering, and why? Well, of course I was. I hadn't had an experience with the steps at all, you know, but I have now, and that's cool. But, you know, one thing that a buddy of mine, Tarek, said a couple weeks ago in a meeting that really just struck me, and I've sat with it. He said, you know, I haven't had a spiritual experience as the result of taking the steps. And I'm thinking, well, this guy's recovered. What is he talking about? Like, I'm getting a little nervous now. And he said, I haven't made all my amends yet. You know, he had a big old chunk of them. And he's made a lot of them, but he hasn't made every single one of them. And what that book promises is that as the result of taking the steps, the spiritual experience would increase. And I sat with that, and I'm like, wow. Huh. Isn't that something to think about? So maybe the growth in this, you know, is part of the path. You know, we do this stuff and we grow spiritually one day at a time, which keeps us removed from the obsession to drink, which is awesome, but it is progressive, it is a growth, it is something that starts off maybe real small. I know it did for me, and it grows bigger. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like when I finally complete my last amends. I had a bunch of them too, you know, and I'm doing them, but that's not an overnight matter either. And I don't know what that looks like. And it's a thought. It's a thought to sit with. But what I do know is that this program has given me such freedom. And it is a blessing to be able to sit here and talk to you guys. And I do want to read. There's just one thing that I do want to read. Because, you know, I told you a lot that this book was, like, real fluffy to me. Now I have, like, a love affair with this book. I have, like, 20 copies of it. And every time I go through a new body of work, I get a new one. And I just started going through the steps again with another friend, and I got a new book, and you know, so now I've got like 21 copies of it. I've got like 5 in my car, 8 in my home. You know, I just, you know, give them to people when I see them and they don't have one. I'm like, why not? I've got one that's duct taped. I've got one that's like been written in twice because I took it to like a big book experience weekend, you know. It's fun, but I love this book now. And this book is so deep. There's stuff in here that I read and it's like, I knew it was there, but it didn't mean anything to me at the time. And the more experiences I have with sobriety and doing the work, this stuff like comes alive and new stuff stands out to me that I knew was there, but I didn't have any connection with before. But one thing, the first thing when I was new, how many people here are like 30 days and under? I mean, it's cool. Yeah, rock. The only thing I read in this book that I thought was cool when I first came in were the 10-step promises. I thought they sounded pretty badass. You know, you hear the 9-step promises read at the beginning of every meeting, and it's, I don't know, they're not real. They're great, you know, you get to experience that stuff. But when I read this, I was like, wow. It says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. One of my teachers told me that includes my thoughts, too. Any of you that suffer from depression, manic depressive, that type of stuff, I feel you. It's in here. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. That was the first promise I ever experienced. I manage a bar. I get it. That stuff happens. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. God, doesn't that sound cool? I don't have to fight this anymore. I don't. We are not fighting it. Neither are we afraid. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. Our master no longer exists. That's a fucking promise. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. How do we do that? We work steps. Who in here doesn't have a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Any of you recovered alcoholics have a responsibility to go up to these people after the meeting. Get hooked up.